This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, and the founder of the Human Animal Connection. And I am so delighted to speak to Kate Titus, and she is the founder and director of A Loyal Companion, which helps dogs that have mobility issues or maybe senior in age or having different physical challenges, all kinds of things from swimming to mobility exercises to training the human how to deal with a dog who's going through these things. So today we're going to really focus on some of the emotions that people might be experiencing if they're dealing with a dog that has special needs or is getting to the, you know, that age in life where it's things aren't working the way they used to work, and all the emotions that humans go through as we experience this. So, Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, I know you've been wonderful. You've helped us with some wheelchairs with some of our students, our high school students that had paralyzed dogs, and we got them wheelchairs and got them moving again. It was so much fun because I was so, before I had seen the process, I was concerned, how is a dog going to learn how to go from being paralyzed to having wheels? You know, in this case, it was real rear wheels behind them. And I was like so worried about, what kind of training do we need? We put the wheels on, and the dog went, boom. Just rolling around the room, just so you know. I mean, it was a little bit of adjustment, but literally within seconds. It's so exciting to see a dog that has not had that kind of motion suddenly be mobile again. So thank you for the good work that you're doing. And I know you've done a tremendous amount of research and understanding. And I know even though you're in Tucson, Arizona, you also work with people worldwide, right? People can work with
Correct.
You online. Great.
Yep.
Okay.
We do quite a few video consults.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Well, I know that one of the challenges that you see is not just on the dog side, but the human side emotionally. Tell us a little bit what you've seen.
Yeah, so that scenario that you just explained about putting the dog in the cart, there is a blossoming of joy that happened. Right.
Yeah.
So the opposite of that has happened at some point where, you know, you realize your dog is paralyzed, you realize your dog is not as able as they used to be. A lot of different emotions start to get to pop up and to become your constant companion. They become your shadow. So what we see and what we try to do is we try to get folks to live in the right now. That's where your dogs are. That's where we need to stay. Let's not make this any more challenging than it needs to be for anybody involved. So what we'd like you to do is let's work with the dog that's in front of you today.
Right.
Because that is going to be a different dog tomorrow. That could be a different dog tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But who's in front of you? How are they, you know, how are they feeling right now? Are they feeling like they want to go for a walk and they can, I shouldn't say that too loud. I have my dogs with me. You know, do they want to, you know, do an activity? Do they want to do enrichment? Do they, you know, what are they up for? Or do they just want to sit beside you and snuggle and be petted and share that connection with you. So we spend a lot of time talking to folks about what they're feeling and the challenges that they're having at home, because that's you know, that's really where we fill the gap. We're not veterinarians, we're not surgeons. We're there to help you take those instructions from your veterinarian and make them work at home. You know, your vet can tell you what's wrong with the dog. They can give you some ideas on maybe how to manage that from a medical or pharmaceutical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that you may be undoing all of that just by the setup of your house. You know, I see you have a rug on the floor behind you over top of wood or laminate, whatever that happens to be, depending on the ability of your dog. That rug may be the only space they feel comfortable walking on. So we talk about those kind of things that really help to ease as much of the burden for the pet, which in turn helps to ease the burden for the pet owner, for the pet parent. So we kind of try to look for those instances and where we can really provide some support.
Yeah, and it can be really challenging when you have a memory of your dog maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe even a year ago, where you could go and go for that little trot or that walk or play or chase that ball or whatever the things that you were used to doing, and all of a sudden it's gone, and the pain of that, the sadness of that, and sometimes I think maybe people get guilty. I think feeling guilty, like, am I doing enough? Am I doing too much? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing?
That is quite a knot you can get yourself tied up into. And I'm just, you know, and you have on top of that, all of the everyday care that you're providing. So, you know, you're probably a little tired, depending on the size of your dog. You may have your own aches and pains that are a direct result of helping your dog. Mm-hmm. And you've got, you know, there's a certain part of your headspace and your mind space that is now totally wrapped up in your dogs that cannot be in anything else. And right. I think, you know, you're just, there are limits all around you. You think there are limits all around you to how much time and how much space you have to give to your dog, mm-hmm. but also give to yourself. Because, you know, self-care is huge, and not knowing what the tips and tricks, like, you know, having a backup person is one thing that I recommend to everyone, mm-hmm. whether that is your husband, your partner, your neighbor, someone that at least can give you an hour to go lay down and take a nap, you know, that you can have a break, whether it's mental or physical.
Right, right. Very, very important. And I want to talk a little bit about pain, because it's not always easy to know if your dog is in pain. I mean, if it's extreme pain, of course, that, you know, we might know that, but we might not know the routine every day, arthritic pain or mobility joint pain. How do you, I know you're not a veterinarian, you can't diagnose, but how do you evaluate, oh, I think that this is pain, you should talk to your vet about getting some, you know, medication for this, or how do you evaluate pain?
I look at pain in a couple of different ways. First and foremost, I look for clusters of signals. It's not a single thing. So let's take panting, for example. Panting is a very common pain signal. Mm-hmm. However, if the dog has just been for a walk or has just gone outside in 110 degree heat to go to the bathroom, panting is completely normal. Mm-hmm. However, if that dog has been inside, it's 70 in your house, haven't been doing anything, haven't been active, but they're panting, they've got a little pull to the eyes, there's a little squint. Mm. Perhaps they didn't want to get up and meet you when you walked into the room. Mm-hmm. They may be irritable to other dogs that are in the house. You know, so there are pieces that you can put together that say, okay, There have been some behavior changes. There's some physical changes in the way they're interacting with me. And that tells me that there's probably some pain, some uncontrolled pain. Mm-hmm. And that is a big distinction, because we need to get pain under control as much as possible. Not only for, you know, everyday living or their activities of daily living, their ADLs, to be able to do those, like being able to transition from being on the floor into a stand up to go get a drink of water, or maybe it's being able to stand up to eat. Big one, posturing to pee and poop. Mm-hmm. You really underestimate how challenging that can be. Those are both very complex postures. Mm-hmm. Even being flexible enough to groom themselves, mm-hmm. or shake off to get extra, you know, debris or hair out of the coat. Understanding how pain plays a role in that is essential. And I think the other thing that is commonly forgotten is that pain is emotional, has emotional effects as well as physical effects.
Right, right. Sometimes behaviors that we don't quite understand, there may be a pain component. And so it's not just a matter of looking at, why is my dog doing this behavior that I don't like? But what is my dog feeling emotionally and physically? That could be, pain could be a factor in some behavior that has cropped up. Yeah,
exactly. Especially if you have a dog that's not normally cranky, that becomes cranky.
Yeah,
that is usually a pretty big pain indicator on that front. Mm-hmm. And I think even just in their ADLs and their everyday activities, one of my favorite examples is, okay, normally water is in the kitchen, right?
That's right.
Where you have your water bowl, or it's on a tiled surface, which we have a lot of here in Arizona. That dog is going to go through a cost benefit analysis. Is it worth it for me to get up from lying down, that's going to be an effort. Mm-hmm. Now I have to walk over there. Now I have to think about how difficult it's going to be to walk across that tile floor.
Mm-hmm.
Pain is a very big teacher. So I remember the last time I fell on that floor and it hurt. Mm-hmm. So am I thirsty enough to, is my need for water enough to overcome the fear of what could happen or has happened in the past?
Mm-hmm.
Is it strong enough for me to overcome that fear, go get the water, and then have to walk back and repeat those same, in reverse, those same activities?
Mm-hmm.
Is that need great enough for that? So the pain element of that, the history of pain, really plays a role in how they choose to move their body and how they choose on what surfaces to move and how much.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot to really think about. And would you say bigger dogs or smaller dogs, are they about equal in terms of the kinds of challenges they have? Or do you see more challenges in small versus big? Or
I don't think so. I think the real difference is the ease with which a pet parent can reach down, pick them up, and make it easier for them to get place to place. As a person who's managed mobility in an 85-pound dog, a 50-pound dog, and a 9-pound dog, it's a whole lot easier to pick up my little guys. Now, I have a rat terrier, Chihuahua mix, Half Moon, who has been in a cart for more than 8 years.
Mm.
He is 12 and a half now, and his front limbs have gone through a lot. Especially his shoulders, his elbows, his wrists. He's done a lot of pulling in his time and a lot of pushing off to get himself to slide across the floor.
Mm.
He's not really able to do that as well as he was in the past. Even with rugs down, it is a real challenge. So, you know, he spends even more time in his cart now. And because he's only 15 pounds, he can do that in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that with, you know, my boxer Kahlua or my Great Dane Foxhound Harley. That just mm-hmm. wasn't an option to have that in the house. So mm-hmm. we had to use different pieces of equipment and different strategies to get them from point A to point B.
Wow. That's just, it's amazing. It's hard for humans. It's hard for the animals. So at what point do you feel like, okay, this is, no, I know you're not a veterinarian, but just in your, do people say to you, you know, in terms of quality of life, I'm not sure anymore? I mean, how do you have those conversations?
Yeah, I feel like we're in the quality of life business. I mean, we're there to make their life as great as it can be for as long as they want to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
We try to help mom and dad figure out if the dog is still engaging with them.
Mm-hmm.
Are they active? And when I say active, that could be mentally engaged, not necessarily mm-hmm. physically engaged. I try to take the mobility piece out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the promise that I made to Harley, who was basically our founding dog, is that, buddy, I'm going to keep you moving as long as you want to be moving.
Mm-hmm.
But at the point where you're done and you're tired, you just need to tell me and I will stop fighting for you.
Yes.
And so I depend a lot on the eyes. I depend a lot on the level of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
I depend a lot on what my gut tells me.
Yes. So when you say the eyes, you're talking about your eyes, not the dog's eyes, or did you mean the
dog's eyes?
Oh, the dog's eyes. Okay. So tell me what you see in the dog's eyes when you see, says, yes, I still want to continue, or no, I don't. What are you seeing?
So I see I'm really looking to see if they're tired.
Mm.
You know, and there's a difference between I'm tired and need to take a nap and I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of being here.
Mm.
And that to me is, I really believe that's something that the pet parent really has to be in charge of.
Yes.
I will never tell a pet parent that it's time to let their dog go.
Right.
That is not my place.
Right.
And I feel like when I look into the eyes of even of my own dogs, but even some other dogs, client dogs, you see there's a lot of effort to being alive. There's the wrinkle of the forehead, the pull of the eyes,
mm-hmm.
I can I can barely muster the effort to be here.
Mm.
And that speaks volumes to me. But I also want to know that the pain protocol that is in place is appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I'll always recommend that folks talk to their vet about that pain protocol before they take any big steps.
Right. Because in some cases, the pain protocols have other side effects that could shorten life in terms of the effects on the organs. And so it's not a simple decision of, oh, there's pain, take a pill. Right. So
correct.
It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act of, of different factors. Okay.
And you really have to consider quality over quantity. Because we might be able to get, you know, help the dog live longer.
Mm-hmm.
But if that dog is in pain that whole time, have we really done them a service? And I would argue, no, we haven't.
Yes. Good point. Good point. Well, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, I want to hear some of the stories of some of the dogs that you've worked with and how lives have changed. We'll be back in just a moment.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph from the Human Animal Connection, and I'm speaking with Kate Titus. She's the founder and director of A Loyal Companion, which helps animals that are dealing with mobility issues, with age issues, with other situations that might make them less mobile and less enjoying life. And she has all kinds of solutions to help dogs that are in dealing with that time and phase in their life and how to get back into the best quality of life that's possible. Obviously, I know you're not a magician. I know you can't wave your wand and fix everything, but you can certainly make improvements. So tell us some of the stories of the dogs you've worked with that where you've really been able to help.
We'll start with one that's a little bit closer to home here in Arizona. We in the Southwest, we have something called Valley Fever. And Valley Fever is spreading across the U.S., but Tucson and Southern Arizona happens to be the epicenter. So we had a dog come in from Pima Animal Care Center, which is our shelter. Mm-hmm. Her name was Daisy. She should have been about a 40-pound pit mix. When we saw her, they had to carry her in because she was only able to really lift her head. She had Valley Fever in almost every joint in her, every major joint in her body. She was really thin. I think she was maybe 28 pounds. She was about 20 pounds underweight. And we worked with her for almost a year. She went from basically being propped up in a quad wheelchair, which is wheels in the front, wheels in the back, support for the body, just to get her into an upright position. Because you can imagine with not being able to move and not having a whole lot of padding, bed sores were a real concern for her. So we got her up into that standing position. The medication that was available through the shelter, thanks to Friends of PAC, which is the nonprofit arm, they were able to really get fighting against the fungus. Valley Fever is the result of a fungus that's found in our dirt out here. So over the course of that year, we did some, we taught the foster home exercises and range of motion. We did multiple swim sessions every week. We have a dog pool here, so we were swimming with her. A great part about that is it gets her off of her body. It lets the body is suspended in the water. So there's no pressure anywhere. We worked with her range of motion in the water, and the swimming started to build some stamina. Pretty soon the foster let us know that she was really annoyed by the front wheels. So we had her in a walking wheels cart. We were able to take those front wheels off, put a different, different arms and different, harness on. Mm-hmm. So she was taken off in her front wheel cart, doing great. About 4 months later, 5 months later, they let us know that, yeah, she was getting pretty active. So we started to work on balance and strengthening with her and her rear limbs. And by about the 9 month mark, she was running with a little drunken sailor thing, a little ataxia, but she was fully ambulating on her own. Wow. And by month 12, she had become ornery enough that the foster had we had to find her another foster home, because this foster also had other medical fosters, and she was way too active for those fosters. So that was pretty amazing. And she went to a fantastic home. She's definitely a success story.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. From hopeless to full of hope.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I think one of my favorite types of dogs to work with are dogs that have a disease called degenerative myelopathy. And it's a lot like ALS in humans. Mm. So basically, slowly and over time, it's usually their back limbs just start not functioning the way they should. They start to knuckle on their paws. They start to lose strength. And there are no medications. There is no cure for this disease. It's really all about maintaining and supporting the best quality of life that you can. And we've had quite a few of these dogs, and they have to be a personal favorite of mine. And we had one, Sir Dalton. He was actually a grand champion show dog, and he came to us with DM, a big boxer, big male boxer. And his mom decided that she was a wound nurse, so she could handle all of the things on his feet, and decided she was just going to rent a cart for him. We do have a rental program, and thought, you know, we've got a few more months with the cart, daily walks. He went through three sets of wheels. So we use foam wheels, and those take a lot to wear out. He ended up living and thriving for another year and a half, almost 2 years, with the cart, with exercise. And he just did great. Wow. He did amazing. And we had Max, who was a German Shepherd with something very similar. He also had DM, but we swam him every week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, DM is supposed to be, it's different for every dog, but you have anywhere from months to a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up swimming every Wednesday with this shepherd, with Max, and he did great. You know, he loved to be with the kids. We had him in a product called Toe-Ups, which keeps him from knuckling, would keep those feet flat on the ground. And he really just thrived. His mom owned a dojo in town. Mm-hmm. So he would go and visit the kids while they were getting ready to do their session, their
martial arts.
Yeah, their martial arts. Just, you know, some amazing things we get to be a part of. And it feels great being on the journey with not just the dog, but with the mom and dad, because they need as much support as the dogs do. And I think they get overlooked a lot, because in our society, you can be a caregiver to your in-laws or to your husband or your wife, but that's expected. You know, that's what society expects, the use of your energy. But say you're doing the same thing for your dog and you get kind of a funny look. So there aren't a lot of support groups and places where these people can go and feel valued and understood.
Yeah. That's really important, because, you know, of course, we believe dogs are family members, and, you know, they need the same understanding and privileges and rights and support that, like you say, if you're caring for your mom or whoever you're caring for. Yeah. But like you say, there isn't a lot of recognition that, A, how much energy it takes and how much emotional balance it takes, you know, to be a balanced system for another being. And how do you help people see you know, okay, so maybe the time is limited, or are these conversations that you have to have a lot, or maybe it is time? I know you don't tell them, but how do you assist when people are struggling?
So we do a lot with quality of life scales, some that we like to use. I probably have 5 of them, and they go anywhere from, is the dog able to be alive? So are they breathing? Are they eating? Are they drinking? Are they mentally engaged? I mean, really basic level, all the way over to how do you feel about what's going on? Is the dog engaged? What are their ADLs look like? Their activities of daily living? Are they able to do those? So depending on which one of those speaks to an individual client that we're working with, I like to send all of them. And mm-hmm. when I had dogs that were in that phase, mm-hmm. I read through them and decided which one spoke to me, and that's the one I stuck with. So what I tell folks is, take it now. You want to take it
before you have the prop, before you're even having this conversation seriously.
Because then you have that baseline. So when you take it again, you don't have to think, oh, well, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. Well, he had a 37 here, and now he's down to a 20, mm-hmm. just for an example. Mm-hmm. So it really gives you, I'm a data person. It gives you rationally, it gives you a reason to think, okay, we're getting close. And I think after the dog is gone, I think it helps relieve any of the guilt, yes. or much of the guilt that you have that you did it too soon, or, mm-hmm. You shouldn't have done it. Well, yeah, your dog was failing. Your dog was telling you that they were ready, and you listened.
Right.
And you recorded. And I think I take solace in that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And it's so important to respect the dog's needs and wishes. You know, we have our own needs and wishes to have our animals be with us forever, and it isn't going to happen. It's part of the experience of having a dog. If you have a dog and love a dog, you're probably going to lose a dog or more dogs.
Any dogs.
But how many you have? Yeah, I know I have one. She's rescue. We don't know, somewhere between 11 and 13. And she's definitely showing some signs of, yeah. So I think I'm going to need to make an appointment and come and bring her in and sure. have you take a look and see what we can do. She's still very engaged and wonderful, but, you know, she was a therapy dog and she was a rescue, of course, from PAC, and was a feral dog. She used to scare grown men, so she was quite wild, but she became a therapy dog, so she's had, you know, nine good years of therapy work, but I can tell she's less interested in going to see the kids. She still likes to get in the car and go somewhere, but she can't wait to get back in the car and go home.
Yeah.
She's definitely telling me, okay, you know, this has been great, but I'm sorry, but my body's just not what it was. And yeah, so that's a lot to face. You know, it's something that we humans have to face in layers. It's not something that you make a quick decision about. Nobody makes a quick decision.
Exactly.
So what are some of the things at home that people, I know, you know, you'd have to see the dog to know for sure, but what are some sort of general tips to think about when you're dealing with dogs like I am with, you know, older, she's peeing and pooping in the house now, you know, she's, and I think it's because it's not easy to go up and down the steps, so...
Yeah. So those are behavior changers are really one of the things you want to keep an eye on. And definitely house training is one of the big ones. My girl, Helen, who happens to be right over my shoulder there.
Yes.
She has lost her house training once or twice when it feels like, oh, I got to poop right now. Mm-hmm. Where that warning system isn't quite what it used to be. Mm-hmm. Routine is huge. Mm-hmm. Keep it as close as you can, including the bathroom times, because sometimes they don't realize that they do have to go, but you take them outside and that triggers, this is where I go to the bathroom. Do I have to go? Yeah, I have to go. So that can be helpful. Feeding times, obviously, you got to have a routine for the input to get a routine for the output. If you have a dog that is weakening in the hind or the front legs, some sort of traction is going to be an issue. So you want to either look at rugs with no skid backing. Mm-hmm. You need to be mindful of any trip hazards and humans that you have in your house. That can be a tough one. You can also get, there are a couple of different kinds of boots that we love or socks that we love for this that are easy to put on and take off. I love lava socks. They're fantastic. Oh. We carry those here. They're like a mix between a slipper and a sock.
Okay.
I love rubber dipped socks. So they have rubber all the way around them, not just a cute little paw pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So if they rotate, they still have traction. And we do have a fun trick on how to keep those on, because some okay. people say, oh yeah, I tried those, but they just fell off. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I got you on that one. Multiple water stations can be good. If you have a dog that doesn't like to move around, having that single water station isn't as efficient, and especially during the summer. You need to make sure they stay hydrated.
Yes.
Because the other element to that is senior dogs don't regulate their temperature as well as they used to.
Oh.
So being mindful of the temperature of the house. If you have a dog door, and this is a big one, if you have a dog door, you need to make sure that your dog is still able to manage getting in and out. Especially getting in, because getting trapped, getting trapped outside in 110 degree weather can be a death sentence. That can be very, very bad. Mm-hmm. That is not a good way to go. Mm-hmm. The same thing is true if you have a pool.
Mm-hmm.
Pools can be great, and I think they're very tricky for people who have dogs that have in the past been excellent swimmers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your dog would run out the dog door, run out the screen, and go jump in the pool, swim a couple laps, get out, shake off, come inside, shake off, get everything wet. those same dogs are at a severe risk if they get outside and want to do the same thing as a senior. Yeah. Now you've got a senior with, let's say, a medium or long coat. Guess what? They just increased by weight by about 8 to 10 pounds.
Wow.
Or the weight of water is about eight pounds per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
So getting in and out of the pool can be a very bad situation for those guys. So if you have a pool, you want to make sure you treat your dog like a toddler around the water. You should always be there and always be paying attention. So if you have a way to shut off access to your pool, you definitely want to do that. Keep gates closed. Just pay attention to that. And I think the other big one that I would recommend is elevating the food and water.
Yeah,
it should come to about, it's kind of hard for me to show you, but it should come to about maybe mid forearm. Okay. So you want them to be able to relax and put their neck down to be able to look at the food or water and then move into it and then come back up. So especially if you have an animal that has had a lot of rear limb weakness, those front limbs have been doing work, a lot more work than you know, for longer than you probably know. So they are tired. They are starting to break down. So there's no reason to make them do extra work. If you look at your dog putting their head all the way down onto the floor to eat from a bowl on the floor, it's almost like they're doing a handstand to eat. And so because there's a lot of head movement when they're eating, there's a lot of weight shifting happening as well. So elevate that food so it's easier for them to get the food, get it, just have to look up a little bit to chew and swallow, look back down.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Much easier. Same thing with the water.
Yeah. Great tips. Well, if people want to get a hold of you, can they do a video session with you and get some evaluation and help? Okay. So that is Kate Titus from A Loyal Companion, and the website is aloyalcompanion.com. It's been so delightful to talk with you. I can't wait to bring Sophia in, my older girl, and see what we can do to help her have better quality of life in her advanced senior years.
Looking forward to seeing her and seeing you again.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you for listening to the Human Animal Connection. We'll see you at the next podcast. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.